Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
One thing people like Jeff Sullivan will tell you is on days like this, in a game like this, variance trumps everything else. It happens that way in the playoffs in general, in these small sample sizes in short series, let alone in single game outcomes. Jeff Sullivan, the senior editor of FanGraphs, is on Twitter at @based_ball. So, why do you matter today, Sullivan? What can you tell us that is actually going to help us figure out what could or should happen tonight?
All right. Well, it was a good talking to you, and hopefully we have something to talk about next week as well.
We'll see.
What do we know? Go ahead, Jeff.
Please ask another question. Let's see what you got.
I was going to say, because Billy Beane says the crap doesn't work in the playoffs, so I guess we just move on. What do we know about starters who move into the bullpen throughout the course of short series or maybe even in one games? I mean, I think people remember Madison Bumgarner and just the terrifying force he was, whether he was starting or relieving. And it's not just been him over the last couple of years. There have been a number of them. Do we find that there's any specific trend here? Does it depend on pitcher and pitch style and perhaps just the soul of a man?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, any given case, any sort of transition, it's always going to depend on the pitcher and how well a pitcher is able to adjust to the bullpen, for example. But just last October, we saw the Dodgers move Kenta Maeda into the bullpen, and then all of a sudden he was unhittable. He was throwing a lot harder. He's in the bullpen now for the similar reason. And I understand you're presumably bringing this up now because the Cubs are going to have Cole Hamels available in the bullpen, according to the update I just heard before I came on the air on your radio station. And Cole Hamels, of course, is not someone who has a lifetime of relief pitching experience, but it seems to be one of those things where when you have the knowledge in advance and the confidence that you can just go out there and you're going to be able to throw it 100%, you're going to face, somewhere between like 3 and 9 batters in a bullpen stint instead of coming out of the rotation. We've already seen Cole Hamels thrown a little harder since he came to the Cubs in the first place, coming over from the Rangers, but I think you can't always assume the adjustment is going to be as successful as a Kenta Maeda or even Madison Bumgarner and his extended appearances years ago. But I think that there is good reason to believe, just because relieving is easier than starting, there's good reason to believe that Cole Hamels could be of real import right away out of the bullpen.
Kyle Freeland, the 25-year-old left-handed starter for the Rockies, going on 3 days rest for the first time. What is the manifestation of a 3 days rest difference? Is it control? Is it velocity? Is it both? Or is it unknown?
So it's hard to pinpoint because generally when you're examining 3 days rest starts, those are almost always happening in the playoffs. And one thing I'm sure you understand by now, when you're dealing with the playoffs and certainly the beginning of the playoffs, adrenaline goes up for everybody. Velocity in general in the playoffs goes up. So even if someone were more fatigued, then, you figure you're Freeland, you're pitching for the season right now, you're not going to feel that fatigue. You're not going to feel anything until you're out of the ballgame. So if I could try to make this a little theoretical, let's say Freeland is going to throw, let's just call it an even 100 pitches. I don't know what he's going to do, but we'll call it 100 pitches. And maybe in an ordinary full rest Kyle Freeland start, he's going to execute 70 or 75 of those pitches the way that he would ordinarily want to. Everyone makes mistakes, but he doesn't make a lot of them. Now, when you're going on short rest, maybe it's going to be more like 60 or 65 pitches, 55 or 60 pitches he's going to execute. So there's going to be these little mistakes. Maybe he's just not going to have everything working in the same sequence. Maybe he's going to get tired a little sooner. And you're not going to see any sort of dramatic difference in his mechanics or his velocity. His stuff is going to move the same. The pitches are just going to likely end up in slightly different places from where he would want. And so you can expect Freeland would make a few more mistakes. And then, you know, I don't know, maybe 1 out of 10, 2 out of 10 mistakes actually get punished. And so it's going to be incumbent upon the Cubs hitters to do something they weren't really doing in September.
One thing that needs to be said today, though, it probably will rankle Cubs fans, is that the Brewers made one hell of a run down September. They won 8 of their last 8 to take the NL Central. And so other than Christian Yelich becoming Barry Bonds for the second half of the season, which is apparent to anybody, what surprised you most about the Brewers' run this last 6 weeks?
I think when you look at the Brewers, it's really easy. This is something we've talked about before, but just like with the A's, it's really easy to look at the team and say, this team doesn't have enough starting pitching, therefore this team can't be really good. And the Brewers and the A's are just evidence that it just doesn't really work like that. These are two teams who have very deep lineups. The Brewers have an outstanding team defense, even with whatever they're doing with Scope and Shaw and Moustakas. I know that they complicated things at the trade deadline, but this is one of the top three defensive teams in all of baseball. And they have a bullpen that can just beat you in like 6 or 7 different ways. One of the most valuable relievers this season was Jeremy Jeffress, who I don't think I've talked to anyone about more than once all year long. All the talk has been about Josh Hader, maybe what was briefly wrong with Corey Knebel, but even Jeremy Jeffress has been really good. So the Brewers just don't need that much out of their rotation. This is a team, based on their pitching staff, it was in a sense kind of built for October, because in October the starting rotation doesn't matter that much, and then the Brewers are leaning into that. It's a deep lineup, good defense, really good bullpen, and it's clearly a dangerous team. I think all the talk about how they needed rotation help around the deadline, which I do think they needed, and I guess Gio Gonzalez did something, but it just doesn't really matter anymore, because there are enough off days in the playoffs that you can just lean on your best relievers and yeah, just do the Andrew Miller thing.
Jeff, I've read a lot of research regarding the effects of travel in football and basketball, the NFL, the NBA, because those are try-harder sports. I know gamblers have really looked at that and said that the amount of energy that one might have based on the number of time zones crossed to the amount of possible sleep, it might be limited in some way where patterns could emerge. What do we know about short-term travel effects on Major League Baseball, if any?
We don't know much. It's a very, very difficult thing to study. I've tried to, I mean, as one example anecdotally, I've tried to look for what's called like the Coors Field hangover effect, see how Rockies hitters have done when they leave homestands, and I haven't been able to find much that changes over time. Like the Rockies' performance in their first few games on a road trip are not meaningfully different from their performance in like the 7th through 10th games on a road trip. So I couldn't find much of anything there. That's just one example. But what I will say is that we're in an era now where a lot of teams are putting a lot of effort and research into, let's call them, I don't know, rest studies, sleep studies, fatigue studies, teams who are trying to emphasize these soft factors, not because we necessarily know that they are going to make all of the difference, but because you have to assume it makes some difference. We've all traveled. Now, we haven't all traveled in the way that Major League Baseball players travel. It's a comfortable setup that they have. It's one of the many benefits of being a baseball player, but I mean, to just get to the heart of it, there is, I think, no conceivable way that the Rockies are not at a greater advantage just from having had to travel. How important that is, I don't know. Just like with Kyle Freeland's fatigue, you're not going to watch the game and say, right there, they did that because they were on an airplane last night. But it has to make a difference, and I would think it effectively has to add to the home field advantage.
He's Jeff Sullivan of FanGraphs here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. We talk to him every Tuesday throughout the baseball season. Jeff, I'm wondering, what, if anything, has the last 163 Cubs games changed in your perspective about what they are going to be for the foreseeable window?
At this point, it does not look like they had the most successful offseason. That's not going to come as a surprise to anyone, but of course Tyler Chatwood hasn't worked out as desired. Yu Darvish certainly hasn't worked out as desired. Brandon Morrow was working out and then no longer is available. So the free agent spending that the Cubs have done over the past few years has not worked out as well as some other teams' free agent spending, and that puts a burden on the payroll. But when you look at this roster still, there is a pretty good abundance of still young, cost-controlled talent. This is probably, it's close, but the Cubs are probably the second-best team in the National League right now, even with all the things that haven't gone as well as they wanted them to. Darvish will be back, and who knows what Chatwood might be able to rediscover over the offseason. So you look at the Cubs. Farm system still isn't where the team would want it to be. It's not good. There's not a lot of reinforcements, and the Brewers are strong. But I mean, you look in the division, and I don't think that the Cardinals are necessarily that close. The Pirates aren't that close. The Reds aren't that close. The Cubs window is still very much pried open. They're still going to be good in 2019. Presumably, they're going to be good in 2020. Obviously, they have a very complicated situation to figure out with Addison Russell, and they need to figure out whether there's going to be reinforcements coming out of the farm. But this is still a team that's in a very, very good position. And so much of what I guess you could say went wrong this year is just that the Brewers were better than a lot of people expected. And so if it weren't for how strong the Brewers finished, then I think it would be a lot easier to just look at the Cubs record and be like, yep, they were really good again.
Jeff, we should know more about the Cubs roster any minute now. I believe it already has been turned into MLB and soon will be public. How would you optimize the 25 for tonight? Would it include Terrence Gore?
I love having that bench runner in the playoffs. I mean, you lean on that 25th roster spot in the playoffs so infrequently, and I think it's something that the 2014-2015 Royals did was maybe even over-exaggerate the importance of the running game in the playoffs, because it's something that's really just on the margins. And if Terrence Gore is in the box taking a swing in a playoff game, then you know something has just gone catastrophic. But I love the idea of having that guy available, especially in a game like this, this one game. How many pitchers are the Cubs going to need to have on the pitching staff? So you definitely have Terrence Gore on the roster today. Try to run on the Brewers bullpen if you get the chance, and maybe that exposes some kind of vulnerability. And then moving forward, I do think you have Gore on the roster throughout the playoffs should the Cubs advance from this, because it does give them something that they don't necessarily have. And a lot of relievers are pretty vulnerable to the running game. At least pitchers just don't pay that much attention to runners. It's not something that's in their wheelhouse. And so it's something that would give the Cubs a potential late inning difference maker that they otherwise wouldn't really possess.
What needs to be known about this Rockies lineup then? I mean, Kyle Freeland is a pretty well-discussed story going on 3 days rest, but I'm looking up and down at a couple of left-handers who handle left-handers really well, whether that's Charlie Blackmon or otherwise. What stands out to you most about this lineup?
Yep, it's a relatively good lineup, but it is, I think the difference that's been made lately, and this would be less familiar to a Cubs fan, but the Rockies have had problems at first base and left field all season long. It's one of the reasons I just couldn't believe they passed on Daniel Murphy when he was available on waivers, because he could have filled the spot. And they have, thankfully for them, they have seemingly found a solution in left field in David Dahl, who is a good prospect they've had for a while, but has a lot of injury problems. Kind of muddied the waters, but David Dahl has, I think he finished hitting home runs in something like 5 or 6 consecutive games. So they have a good solution, it looks like, in left field. Now, you'll recognize the name Carlos Gonzalez. He's not what he used to be. Ian Desmond is just a catastrophic problem for the Rockies right now in terms of performance and salary. So they're vulnerable at first base. They don't get a whole lot of offense out of catcher. I think that this is, as always, you look at the Rockies and the hitting is worse than you think and the pitching is better than you think. Kyle Freeland has been outstandingly good for as little attention as he has received. But when you've got Blackmon, you've got Dahl, you've got Story, you've got Arenado in there, it's a dangerous lineup. It's a legitimately dangerous lineup. But the Cubs lineup is better. I think the Cubs defense is better. I think even right now, there's an argument to be made. The Cubs bullpen is better. Maybe it's about even. So this is probably going to come down to how many innings Kyle Freeland can give the Rockies today on short rest, because he is kind of the Rockies' big advantage today.
Another Kyle we may examine is one who you did in Kyle Schwarber, who might not get the start tonight, but could then find himself in the machinations of Joe Maddon in a high leverage at bat at some point later on in the game with an opportunity to break something open. And you detailed in your piece that Kyle Schwarber has had for lack of a better term, one of the chokiest offensive seasons that has ever been tracked by the differential in weighted runs created plus when it has mattered as opposed to low and medium leverage situations. So I went back and forth a little bit with the esteemed Joe Sheehan. And he said, if you look at some of the names there, it's clear that somebody like Schwarber is hurt by the fact that specifically in those situations, there are opposing pitchers who are paid just to get people like him out. So we saw Jim Thome's name in there. So even thinking about that, to see that his differential, I want to say his weighted runs created plus in high leverage was negative 62, and his differential was negative 199, almost incomprehensible. What does that all mean?
Yeah, so it's always a little uncomfortable to write about clutch performance on clutch performance, because when you write about it, here's the fact of the matter. This season, Kyle Schwarber has been an unclutch hitter. There's no other way around it. In the most important situations, he has been bad. Full stop. In the past, we've seen him hit very big home runs in the playoffs. Of course, he's been more clutch than this. There is a difference between having been unclutch and being unclutch, and I never write these things with the intent of being like, of just piling on a Kyle Schwarber. Even in the past, Chris Bryant has had some somewhat similarly ugly clutch numbers in high leverage situations. So you look at Schwarber, and the fact of the matter is that in 56 plate appearances, his 56 most important plate appearances this year, according to math, he had two hits. That is not good. He had two singles, not enough output. In the past, he has also been a little worse in high leverage situations than he has been in other situations. And I think it is twofold, well, I guess threefold. One, some of this inevitably, invariably, is just random noise. He is not that unclutch of a hitter. He's made it to the major leagues. It's psychologically doesn't make sense. But he is a lefty who has a big platoon split, and historically you can see that lefties with big platoon splits do end up struggling more in these situations, just because, like you said, there are these situational lefties that every team has, and if you're facing the Cubs, of course you want to bring in one of your top lefties to face Kyle Schwarber. He's one of the big lefty threats that the Cubs possess. And then there is also the fact that now that Schwarber has a bit of swing and miss in his game, and I think strikeouts are also correlated with being a little worse. When you are a strikeout-prone hitter, and then you were in the later innings maybe, and you're in an important situation, you're more likely to be facing a strikeout-heavy pitcher. Those are the best relievers. And so when you have a strikeout guy against a strikeout guy, that favors the pitcher, as opposed to having a contact hitter, someone like him. In the past, we've seen Eric Hosmer, for example, has been a really clutch hitter just because he's been able to make contact more often. So you've got luck has worked against Schwarber. His left-handed platoon hitting has worked against Schwarber. His strikeouts have worked against him. He is going to deliver, between now and the end of his career, he is going to deliver a highlight reel of very important hits. But I would imagine that until or unless he improves against lefties, he is going to be worse in those situations than he is overall, and that's just the fact of the matter.
Jeff Sullivan, thank you. Appreciate it as always. Yeah,
absolutely, and I guess we'll see if we talk next week, huh?
I hope we do. Jeff Sullivan of FanGraphs.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.